This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on, will Representative Hinda Solis, Barack Obama's new designee for Secretary of Labor, indeed be a Secretary for Labor?
But now, Stanley Aronowitz instructs that the economic crisis is buried deep within the structure of capitalism and that there is little or no prospect that within the current framework of neoliberal market capitalism that the deepening economic crisis can be significantly reversed and a stimulus package bring prosperity.
But Professor Aronowitz opens a dialogue on how the left can wrestle the economic monster until it cries uncle. Now Stanley Aronowitz, professor of sociology, cultural studies, and urban education at the CUNY Graduate Center.
Barack Obama has been more and more rebuffed by the Republicans as he talks about a stimulus package and as he talks about the creation of, let's say, 3 million jobs. What do you think about the stimulus package and the possibility of what Obama is calling 3 million jobs?
It's all full of holes. Let me start from the top. In the first place, 80% of it is going to go to the private sector. That means 30% of the 80%, if they're talking about, for the sake of argument, $800 billion, 30% of the 80% is going to go for profit. If the government was the employer, as was the case in the New Deal, and was the case to a large extent in the 60s anti-poverty programs, then there would be many more jobs created, nothing like 3 million. But still, this is going to be a giveaway to the private sector. The second thing is there's going to be $300 billion, according to the reports we've been getting, that will go for tax cuts. The average person would get $500 to $1,000 tax cut, and businesses would get tax cuts as well. So there's another giveaway. The business tax cut is really unconscionable, unless it was real small business, but they're not going to confine it to small business. And the third problem, and this is the one I raised in the article that you guys read that I guess you invited me for, is that if you do a lot of investment, they're talking $100 billion in infrastructure, refurbishing and rebuilding and so on, that creates a limited number of jobs. Limited because a lot of that work is done with very high technology, very, very low labor inputs. Even the materials and the machines that are produced, earth-moving equipment, for example, is very high technology with very few jobs that are being produced.
But wait a minute, these are supposed to be shovel-ready jobs.
Well, the word shovel-ready, I think, is a shuck. Sorry, they're not shovel-ready jobs. They're KWU earth-moving equipment. They're Caterpillar earth-moving equipment. There's going to be a lot of jobs. Yeah, I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands if they put $100 billion into it. But it's not the kind of work that produces a lot of jobs. Remember, during the New Deal, when they built the FDR Drive, it was with pick and shovel. Most of those jobs were very, very heavily labor-intensive jobs, and they had a considerable number of service sector jobs that were produced, social services, and they built housing, and they had people who went out and were in writers' projects and artist projects and all sorts of things that were very, very labor-intensive. They're not talking about that. The only place where they're talking about jobs that are really socially useful, aside from the construction, for the bridges and for the roads and for the tunnels and so on, is the green jobs. Now, they're going to give those green jobs to private sector companies. And those private sector companies are going to skim 30% off the top, but they're worthwhile jobs to have. But the term 3 million jobs is really mostly propaganda. And I think it's incumbent upon people who really, and especially the labor movement, to say, hey, wait a minute. Let's break this down to find out what kind of jobs you're actually going to produce, who's going to get the benefit. And I think that that benefit is going to be not entirely to business and the same old that got the $700 billion bailout under TARP, you know, the bank bailout, but they're going to begin to see more money coming into their coffers under the Obama plan. I don't want to speculate, but I suspect that the real reason he's doing it is because he can't win Republican support to his plan unless he gives the Republicans' supporters, the business interests, a lot of money, unless he does a lot of tax cutting, which are really not, which Bush did as well. So he's doing a Bush program for 3/8 of his thing, and then he's doing tax cutting for a lot of the other people as well. This is not a particularly promising prospect unless there was real pressure from unions, from ordinary people to actually show where the jobs are going to be produced.
Well, that's the problem. There seems to be pressure from the right, but there's never pressure from the left.
No, because everybody's afraid.
Yeah, and I mean, he doesn't need that many people in the House. He doesn't need that many people in the Senate. He could buy off a few of them to get a decent program. I mean, it looks like from the tax package that was announced and from the way this is going, it seems like Labor is always last in line like they were for the cabinet appointments. Focus on the jobs. What kind of program would you advocate, Stanley?
In the first place, I would judge the jobs that are needed to be produced on three criteria. One is how many jobs, what kind of work produces the most jobs. Secondly, he said he wants to do this, and I hope he does, that he's going to put a considerable amount of money in extending unemployment compensation for the unemployed and also to provide health benefits, and that is the health care, which I would hope would not be what he said during the campaign, which is that I'm going to let you buy a good plan from a private insurance company, but that the government would be the provider, that is the single-payer provider, for the at least to start with, for the low-income and unemployed people. The third criterion, which I think would be very important, would be to make these direct government jobs. That is to say, let the government employ people to rebuild the roads, let the government employ people to provide the social services that people need in schools, in healthcare facilities, in social welfare agencies, and so on. Because when you contract out to the private sector, you lose a lot of money to profit. Those would be three guiding principles, and then I would then look at what specifically you really wanted to do to produce the kind of job program which benefits the American people.
Well,
green jobs, absolutely.
Well, before you start on the green jobs, let me just push a little further on this because I'm not really convinced. You know, you talked about the pick and shovel, but it would seem to me that most of the development or redevelopment of the infrastructure is pick and shovel. It is not the earth movers. It is still the filling of holes. It is still the individual worker and very labor intensive that gets up and
10% of construction is the individual worker and labor intensive. Mimi, I'm sorry to say this, but if you go and look at a construction project, you're going to see an awful lot of machinery. But I think the green jobs that he was talking about, which are useful, are things like solar panels, are things like windmills, really cleaning out the water systems. That may be very labor-intensive jobs, especially the sheet metal that's required to produce things like solar panels. But there's also cleaning up the forest, which is a green job. And that could be very labor-intensive. You remember that the WPA had young people going into the forests and the woods and into the communities and cleaning streets and cleaning the polluted rivers and things like that. That would be very important. And I don't think that should be sacrificed on the altar of making money for some private corporation. But I don't think you can depend on the ordinary construction job to produce an awful lot of jobs. If you look at the construction workers' unions, for example, they are about half the size that they were 20 years ago. And one of the reasons is because a lot of this is automated and highly capital intensive. Some of it, of course, is that they've gone to non-union sector to do some building. But I think to a large extent it's because of technological change. And I won't make that the major issue. I think the most important issue is the 80% of the jobs will be essentially jobs that will be contracted out to the private sector. I think the other important issue is the $300 billion that will be frittered away in $500 and $1,000 tax breaks, which is what the Bush administration did. And those two things are going to produce a lot of the $800 billion.
And why is farming this out to the private sector so bad?
Because it ends up reducing the number of jobs that people are directly are going to get. Because the company's got to take their overhead, they've got to take their profits, they will use every opportunity to skim. Now, even if it was 20%, but it is normally 30%, that's not money that's going directly into employment. That's money that's going into an employer's pocket. Now, some of it he may reinvest in machinery, but a lot of it is not going to happen in any short term. In other words, in the short term, we're going to have fewer jobs with 80% in the private sector. The second reason it's not good to have 80% in the private sector, it perpetuates a policy which basically goes back to the policies of it's still Reaganomics, which is that we take care of the big guys first and we take care of the little people second.
Stanley, two things, really. What is a poor president to do? There is the reality of this society and the function of a president. Number two, what is a poor beleaguered leftist to do in response to this? You're saying that all of this is kind of rooted in market capitalism, which cannot possibly succeed. And so What is that dialogue? What is that action that we take without being ultra-left and totally removed?
Oh, I'm not talking ultra-left. They talk about the New Deal, right? Why was it the policy of the Roosevelt administration, when he finally got around to the Works Project Administration, the WPA, that the government was the direct employer? Because they knew that in order to be able to make a real dent in the unemployment, which was a serious political problem for them, that they had to make the government the direct employer. Why did they end up in direct income payment, which was the welfare program? Because they knew that unless they put money into people's pockets, and I don't mean $500 and $1,000, but real money, that they were not going to be able to address the problem of the decline of demand, or what we now call consumption. There is no economic rationale for what the Obama administration is doing. Now, to be perfectly honest, I don't think Roosevelt did this because he was a rational person or out of the goodness of his heart. He had a labor movement that was going on strike like it was going out of style. That's 33 and 34. There was general strikes in San Francisco, in Minneapolis. There were national textile strike in 34. There were minor strikes and garment worker strikes. Those were five big areas of strikes. And he had to do something. So we created real work program, an income program. Now, I don't blame Obama, but he can't do anything given this condition unless there is a labor movement and unless there's a popular movement that says you can't do it that way. And what I'm concerned with is that in the United States Congress, as well as on the left, nobody of any consequence is actually looking carefully at this, what they call, recovery package. This recovery package is a giveaway to big business. And what is left of the tax program that ordinary people are going to get is not going to be extremely stimulating to the economy.
Do you have a website where people can read some of the things that stimulated Ken and I to get in touch with you?
Sure, StanleyAronowitz.org.
And the article's on it?
No, the article's not yet on it. They can get the article on Portside at yahoogroups.com. They can get the article at globalresearch.com, which is another website. It's on two places where my article is there. And then, of course, they can read Just Around the Corner, which is the paradox of the jobless recovery, which I wrote in 2005, which predicted a lot of the things that are going on now.
And we're going to leave it there, and I urge people to do just that, and we will continue to have our provocative and important discussions with Professor Stanley Aronowitz. And from your ears to President-elect Barack Obama and to all of us out there to do what we have to, which is to organize, and make sure programs are shaped in our collective interest.
I can feel the spirit building, soft as a whisper, but loud as a roar, and I can feel something stirring like I never have before. We've been quiet too long, my friends, but the working folks of this country will rise again. We've been quiet for 30 years now. You had the work and you gave us the pay. But with hard times around the corner, you'd think we'd see our better day.
Well, this certainly is the time to say that the working folks of this country will rise again. Jubilant is really the word that comes to mind for the reaction of the labor community to the selection by President-elect Barack Obama of Representative Hilda Solis to become the new Secretary of Labor. The daughter of immigrants from a union family, Representative Solis has been described as having a resume a mile long concerning the rights of workers, women, and the environment.
to provide us with a greater insight about the new Labor Secretary and the work cut out for her, protecting and extending workers' rights in the economy, stopping the hemorrhaging of jobs, and growing the economy. We're joined by Thea Lee, Director of Policy of the AFL-CIO.
Well, is it too good to be true? Do tell us a little bit more about who Representative Hilda Solis is.
Well, we are thrilled with the selection of Hilda Solis. We think she's going to be a fantastic labor secretary, and we look forward to working with her to help get this economy back on track and to help create some good jobs for working families, to strengthen the labor movement, to protect worker rights, and to fight for a whole lot of things that she's put at the center of her interest while she's been in Congress: green jobs, fair trade, and strong protections for workers. So the contrast is pretty stark between what we've had for the last 8 years and Congresswoman Solis coming in to be our new Secretary of Labor.
As Secretary of Labor, I know a lot of people are concerned about the Employee Free Choice Act, but what can she do hitting the ground running in terms of the responsibilities and powers of Secretary of Labor?
Well, actually, there's an enormous number of things she can do. I mean, one thing that's kind of straightforward, which is start by aggressively and consistently and fairly enforcing our labor laws, which sounds like that should be easy, but it hasn't always been the case. So, you know, we'd certainly like to see her put good, strong people throughout that department to enforce our wage and hour laws, our minimum wage laws, our health and safety laws, our mine safety and health laws, and so on. So that's a huge job, and one that I know she's up to. There are a whole lot of other areas where the regulations that the Labor Department writes on how to implement labor laws can be written in a much more labor-friendly way, and some examples are things like the ergonomics rules and the directions that the Labor Department gives to all the folks who are out there implementing and enforcing our labor laws. So a huge area that won't directly be her job, but is related, of course, is to put people who care about and believe in the law and worker rights in charge of the National Labor Rights Board and the National Mediation Board. Those are the agencies that are really going to enforce labor laws at the workplace, too.
Thea, I just want to backtrack for a moment because I want to be clear about the role that organized labor, that the working man and woman played in the election of Barack Obama. There certainly has been a lot of discourse on various other groups, but why don't you sound our horn a bit?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. And the labor movement was full steam ahead this last year. I think we all recognized that this election was the most important we'd seen in our lifetime. And so I think on every measure, whether it was the enthusiasm that labor volunteers brought to the job all across the country, or the funds that we had to spend in order to get people out into the workplaces, out into every district and so on, the AFL-CIO spent about $53 million, and then our unions, you know, another several hundred million on top of that. But the money was really the least of it. The most important thing was the hundreds of thousands of labor volunteers who were out there every day, every weekend, phone banking, lit dropping, door knocking, and the level of enthusiasm was amazing. People are just so thrilled about the prospect of Barack Obama as president, and they worked really, really hard, and also in the congressional races, which were important too.
Now, Ken mentioned it a moment ago before he talked about hitting the ground running, and that was the Employee Free Choice Act, which
Yes.
is critical to allow for the furtherance of workers organizing in this country, organizing into institutions, into organizations that protect their rights and grow their benefits. Well, there seems to be some tepidness now as to whether or not there really will be a push for the passage of the Employee Free Choice Act. What do you think?
We're pretty confident that the Employee Free Choice Act will come up, and we hope it'll come up early in the year. This is, as you say, an incredibly important piece of labor law reform that will make it easier for workers to join together at the workplace, to bargain collectively, to bargain for health care, for pensions, for job security, for decent wages, and so on. And we actually think that, especially in the middle of this economic recession, the one thing we need to do is strengthen workers' bargaining power and rebuild the middle class. And there's no better way of doing it than through the Employee Free Choice Act. But as you say, there is some resistance, and you know the business community is going a little bit berserk, and there's vowed to spend tens of millions of dollars fighting the Employee Free Choice Act and spreading a lot of disinformation about it. So we're geared up for a pretty big battle, and we've got folks out across the country who are already working to educate members of Congress and union members and the community and build strong alliances and so on. So we know there's going to be pushback, but we are confident that we're going to win this one.
And the Employee Free Choice Act would do
would make it a whole lot easier for workers to form a union at their workplace. It would do three things. One is that as soon as a majority of workers sign a card saying they'd like a union, the union would be automatically recognized. And that's sometimes called card check, but it's in place in a lot of places right now, some workplaces in the United States, and it's working very well for those workers and for the employers. The second thing would be to make it easier and quicker to get a first contract to avoid the employers dragging their feet and pulling that out for a long time. So it would set some deadlines that would require the workers and the employers to go to arbitration if they couldn't reach an agreement in, I think it's 90 days. And then the third thing is to increase the penalties for employers who violate labor laws. And I think that's also a really important piece because, as we all know, we have some pretty important protections for workers who try to form unions in the law today, but those laws aren't enforced and the employers routinely violate them and face very few penalties. So those three things together, making it easier to form a union, making it easier to bargain a first contract, and increasing penalties for employers who break the law, we think are tremendously important updating of our labor laws.
We've had some really disastrous opinions, actions by the National Labor Relations Board, which I know doesn't come under the Labor Department. Are there going to be vacancies in the NLRB soon enough to make a difference for Obama to make appointments?
Well, actually, there are a bunch of vacancies right now, and that in many ways is a good thing because pretty much on January 20th, President Obama will be able to appoint some good worker-friendly people to the NLRB, and I think that should make an enormous difference in protections for workers, particularly if they go to try to form unions.
What is your sense of what the position would be of a representative, Hilda Solis, relevant to the auto industry, specifically the auto workers, who are still getting raked over the coals, even as George Bush releasing the small amount of money as a kind of bridge loan that he did to Detroit, but not without exacting major concessions that are absolutely detrimental to the labor workers in the auto plants?
I don't know specifically what Representative Solis's position is, but she's been so supportive of working people throughout her career that I'm pretty sure when she comes in that she will understand that this is not the time to be punitive and to punish the workers for the failure of the economy and the slow sales and so on. So I think she's certainly somebody who understands the importance of strong unions and a middle class and making sure that workers have the chance to stand up for themselves at the workplace. So we certainly hope that, you know, this is obviously a very, very difficult and challenging time, not just for the auto workers, but for the whole economy. But that's why it's so important that we're going to have somebody like Hilda Solis as Labor Secretary, because I think she understands the challenges that workers are facing and is sympathetic to them and will really use her clout and her voice, her position within the administration to fight very hard for workers.
Thea, do you have any information about whether Hilda Solis would support, as Bush certainly has proposed, a bracero-type program, a guest worker program, or what the stance and positions that she might push for in terms of immigrant labor?
I don't know the specifics on her position. I know that some of the key points that we've been pushing for, of protecting the rights of immigrant workers, that she's very much on board with, and certainly the need for comprehensive immigration reform. So I think those two elements, which are really important, and it will be very challenging in the next administration, there's no question about it, but that she, coming from an immigrant family, as she does, I think one side of her family is from Mexico, the other is from Nicaragua. So she has both a Central American and a Mexican sensibility around the immigration issues there. And she grew up, of course, she's from California, so she's very familiar with the ways in which immigrant workers can be taken advantage of if their rights aren't protected.
On practically the same day that we heard the announcement about Representative Solis, we also heard an announcement about the Trade Secretary, and Representative Solis is against NAFTA and he is for NAFTA. So what kind of signals are we getting from the Obama administration on NAFTA and other trade legislation?
The important thing on this are the statements that President-elect Obama has made himself, the positions he laid out in the program and during his campaign, where he has been very clear that current trade policy is not working. He's been critical of NAFTA. And I think in the end, his trade representative has been put in place to follow Barack Obama's trade policies and not necessarily his own past positions. So we certainly hope that one of the first acts of the new administration will be to meet with the Canadian and Mexican governments to bring in some civil society stakeholders and to take a really close and an honest look at NAFTA, what's working, what's not working. I think all three countries have things about NAFTA that they hate. And maybe we can find some common ground and figure out ways that we can move forward.
Thea, what would you say are the critical agenda items for labor which must be impressed upon the Obama administration and hopefully aided by our new Secretary of Labor?
Well, I'd say we have three top legislative priorities, and that is a really strong economic recovery package, and certainly President-elect Obama has spoken very forcefully about that. The second is the Employee Free Choice Act, as we've discussed, and how important that is to the labor movement. And the third is national health care reform. So those are three things that are tremendously important to working families, and I think they're all on the radar screen. And part of the question will be, you know, how we can mobilize folks and make sure we have strong support for all three of those things. There'll be some pushback on all three of them, but we're going to need to make sure that our folks are well-educated about the needs for it and that all our friends out there are helping us make the case with members of Congress and with the new president.
Thea Lee, Director of Policy of the AFL-CIO. Maybe the other nut we can crack is organizing Walmart. but certainly jubilant has been the word. It seems to be a great pick to have Hilda Solis as the new Secretary of Labor. And I'm sure that all of us who support ourselves, the workers, who create the wealth will hold their respective feet to the fire so that we do have the kind of agenda that you laid out passed.
We'll look forward to having your support and the support of a whole lot of folks out there, because I know that this is an agenda that's important not just to the AFL-CIO, but to working families.
The working folks of this country will rise again. And I can feel the spirit building, soft as a whisper.
And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And to learn more about Building Bridges, go to our new webpage, www.buildingbridgesradio.org. That's www.buildingbridgesradio.org.